Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. I want to thank you for your ears and your attention, and I want to thank you for your punctuality. If you have been following the show for any amount of time, I can't tell you enough how grateful I am for your presence in my life and for my ability and opportunity to express myself in this format. And hopefully we're all a little bit more curious at the end of this, or at least a little bit more confused. Sometimes confusion can be the necessary catalyst to understand anything. Confusion at least can be motivating. I'd like to preface today's episode with a story. There once was a little boy who was very awkward and not very good at dealing with his peers. He was very good at interacting with adults and especially producing in the educational, institutional setting that most children spend a majority of their days in. He spent most of his time in between the pages of books, exploring the fantasy worlds and examining the conversations and the interpersonal communications of the fictional characters that walked amongst the pages due to his own confusion and how people interacted in the real world. But not to make that sad, this little boy, he seriously enjoyed and took pride in the fantasy worlds that were created through his reading. If you haven't quite been able to catch on by my tone, I'm speaking of myself. I learned how to read at an incredibly young age. I remember sitting with those easy-to-read children's, you know, the ones that have the little numbers in the corners, like the Step 1, Step 2, Step 3 books. And it was about dinosaurs, and I was obsessed with dinosaurs. And so, and at least the way that I tell myself the story in my memory, it was my obsession that led me to want to be able to read the words that made up this tome, because I could stare at the pictures all day long, but I couldn't get the information that I desired. And this is at the very edge of my memory. I was probably 3.5 or 4 years old at this moment. For some reason, I remember a Waffle House, but I was reading Harry Potter by the time I was 5 or 6 years old. And I spent a lot of time in books, and I still do. It's still my favorite hobby. And part of the reason why I wanted to talk about the topic that I'm talking about today is that I often try to discuss my love of reading. And some people like books, and that's cool. And I really like to talk books with people. It's the same feeling that people get when they get to talk video games, or they get to talk sports, or they get to talk cars, like, or guns, or kids. There's always these niche hobbies and habits that we can relate to others about. And I try to do that with books, and it does happen. I'm not saying that there's nobody who doesn't read. It's definitely, and I saw a statistic somewhere saying that reading's on the rise in comparison to most of history. You know, but I don't see that, at least in my circles or in my workplaces, and especially the type of books that I end up reading typically. It's hard sometimes to find a good discussion partner, which is why I'm always putting out a hook in these episodes. My email is very available, the Gingerbread Man's Dialogues, and I would love to have an argument or a collaborative discussion with you about anything that's on the show, anything that's been on any past episode. I have a lot of material that I have previously published that is available, and we go around in circles on the Gingerbread Man, but sometimes the revolution is what makes it more fun. So check it out if you're interested, and let's have a discussion. So one of the things that I hear often is, well, I don't really like books, or I like movies, you know. So instead of focusing on the separation between a movie and a book, whereas a lot of movies are based on books, and sometimes it even goes the other direction where books are based on movies, and a lot of movies are now based on video games, the way that this fades between it all, it's rather loose. And what I would like to define it all as under an umbrella term would just be story. What I've always been obsessed with is a good story, you know? And to go to the other forms, you know, I love a good movie. A good movie that really hits home. You can walk out of a movie theater sometimes and there's this feeling that you stepped into this mind of this character. You know, that's the essence of a story, is there's this creative element in it because somebody made up this fantasy or this fiction. And of course, there's stories about nonfiction as well, but somebody had to tell it. And the essence of telling is a very special power that I've always been enamored by. And I've always been a consumer of the story, but I love story in a video game as well. There's immensely good games that have come out in recent. When games first came out, there was a huge competitive element to it with high scores and with the options not being as available as it is now in modern times to create extensive worlds that the character has the ability to roam throughout and to discover. You know, you have much more pixelated flat, and that had less options, which led to the replay value being around skill. Whereas I'm not a very skillful individual. I've never been very good at most physical things. And the things that I do get good at have taken immense practice. You know, but I've never been the one to be able to beat anybody. So skill-based games have never been my forte. But I find myself trapped in good stories where it doesn't matter. Where you can turn the difficulty level down and go slow and just look at how these artists and creators have been able to craft this beautiful creation that I've seen in a lot of games lately. Like, these are whole worlds that I would envy to have a VR suit and to be able to step into some of this stuff. One of the forms of books that I've been fascinated by is a genre called the lit RPG, which is basically a game, like, but a play-by-play, like if there was somebody narrating a game, put like, and that's what you're, that's the book, that's what you're reading. And so there's statistics. Another good way to put it is, it would be like if you had a dungeon master from Dungeons and Dragons, which the dungeon master is the one who tells the story and leads the characters on and has to have some sort of creative element and storytelling ability to do it. And it's like reading a dungeon master book, you know. So you have the statistics, you have like stat sheets, you have levels, and it's really dorky. I like to think of how people used to listen to, or not used to, I'm sure people still do, listen to sports radio, where you have the announcer describing what's going on second by second, and then they use statistics as well. They have, like, you know, percentages, and because the person knows the game so well, it can make this picture of what's going on in their head, even though it's only auditory. And so that's kind of how I see this book, is like, even though you're not actually playing the game, it still gives you the gif of experiencing somebody else playing the game, or you kind of, and it's really good. And so, you know, there's all kinds of new material that are coming out that fuses these ways of storytelling together into this tapestry. And I think that every form of story is valuable. I really do. I have a hard time watching movies based upon good books, because it's hard to beat my own little inner movie theater. And I'm rarely pleased with the productions of worldly crews. But still, you know, it still needs to be done to have these crossovers. Not to dig a ditch into that route. But why is storytelling important? Well, let's think about where it began. Storytelling is probably as old as language is, because I feel like it was initially a route to transmit not exactly future information, but some sort of plan, you know. And language allowed for communication from one individual to another within that society. And not to say that animals don't have language. I think that would be severely anthropocentric. I don't know what the word I'm looking for. Anthropomorphize would be to turn an animal into a human but to turn a human into an animal characteristic. I don't know what that would be. But we can't put our human characteristics upon the critters, and nor can the critters be seen the other way. Everything has to be viewed from its own lens, within its own capacity as a being or as a creature. That being said, language and utterances in creatures seems primarily to have come into being as a way to express information to another individual, and I would say in some sort of planning way. I can't even fathom the development of a complex language like the one that I'm using right now to communicate with you. And it couldn't have been, it's probably was not very subtle, you know. And maybe I'm not a linguist either. But language is the primary piece that builds a story in all of its ways. And maybe not even language, maybe even a symbol, you know. A symbol is a unit of reality expressed in a way. So, for instance, red, the color of red can be, you know, just a redness, you know. But the symbol behind what the redness speaks for, for instance, redness can allude to ideas of love. Redness can allude to ideas of, you know, lust, like the ways that advertisers use colors. So there's this abstraction where the symbol comes in. And language is purely symbol. Every single bit of sound that I make with my vocal and my physical body right now, none of those sounds really are replications of what I'm even trying to describe. The fact that your brain can pick up all these sounds and then it takes those symbols and then builds them into something meaningful, hopefully, if I do a decent enough job, you know. So, at the essence of a story, at least for humans, seems to be language, the telling of a tale through a symbolic journey, which the tying together of symbolic meaning to language is the artistic bend in writing. You know, a good writer uses illusionary language and uses descriptions so that you have a feeling, you respond not to the word they used, but to all the other baggage attached to that, which the artist, the writer, has the ability to know which buzzword in tandem is going to make you feel those things in a way. You know, and maybe it's not as premeditated as I believe, you know, but I can't help but feeling that when a writer gets a zinger and is able to put together a line that they know it's going to sound really good before they actually, well, they never experience it from somebody else's viewpoint. No creator ever does get to see it from the other person's viewpoint when they experience it. So I guess we can't get too attached to our own creations either. However, sitting around the campfire, primitive man and woman, we're telling stories, we're planning for the next day. And whilst doing that, I think the symbology was helped by the fact that if a storyteller does a good job and is able to tell a good tale, it spreads on that virtue alone. This story gets retold too. You know, think of Cinderella and all the different ways that Cinderella has been told throughout different cultures and different countries. You know, Red Riding Hood. All these grim fairy tales and all these stories, most of them are recycled. What is originality, even? I'm not sure that anything ever was original to begin with. Well, of course, you know, even though I can't fathom the subtlety of human of language development, at some point, there was the initial story. But that's gotten so lost and convoluted throughout history that it almost is pointless to argue about it. The meaning that is expressed from being told, and the reason it's so contagious, that's the mysticism behind storytelling to me. So why is storytelling important? Well, one, I think it's mystical. As wooshy-gooshy as that is, I think it's part of what makes life magical is the ability to tell stories even in our daily lives. Even if the stories that we're telling are incredibly mundane, you know, gossip is fun. You know, as long as we're not hurting anybody. Everybody tells some sort of story about others. And something I read was that gossip is more likely to be spread if the person is like disliked, you know? But we like to hear things about somebody we like as much as we like to hear good news about ourselves. And I can't quote myself. I don't even know where I heard that. But I am inclined to believe that. At least a little bit. I think that just by trying to lift others by celebrating with them, which we can do through practice as well, You know, I've seen a lot of bitter individuals, and I've also been that bitter individual when I can't celebrate somebody's success because of other feelings I have towards that person. But celebrating the success of somebody else uplifts you, you know, and societally in the group, like say in a workforce, if you celebrate for somebody, you know, that's a moralistic glue that is good for the team, or even in a family sense. Celebrate for your loved ones in a family. Don't be upset or ambivalent because it doesn't have to do with you personally. We tell stories around dinner tables. Some of my earliest memories was hearing about my father's day, and he eventually got married and he had my sisters. And even when we sit around the table now, when we're all growing up, you know, they're still teenagers, but that's still a moment where we get to tell stories about our day. And my teenage sisters are boy obsessed, so all I get to hear about is nauseating melodrama that I can't quite relate to. But at least that time is there, and I'm grateful for the ability to hear about their days, and I'm grateful for the ability to share my day, you know? And I think it's important for these spaces to be in our lives, you know, parties, get-togethers, holiday feasts, are also other spaces where people get to share stories. You know, when you haven't seen somebody for a long time, there's always this game of catch up, you know, where we're rushing to fill in all this stuff because you don't know where I've been, you don't know what I've seen, and it's exciting, you know? In my love of books, I often say that I read because it gives me something to think about, and if I didn't read, I'd have nothing to talk about. And I used to be bad about that, and I didn't, and now I realize that people aren't interested in what I'm reading about, and so I don't share unless it's appropriate and relatable to what they're talking about, instead of me just being like, guess this is what I'm reading about, because that never ends well. Nobody shares the interests that way. But when I get done with a lot of reading, like this weekend, I had a 3-day weekend, which was amazing. I know last week you heard how tired I was and a little burnt from working as much. But this weekend, I had the pleasure to sit with my books for a while. And I read probably 300 or so pages. Not bragging, I'm not putting out any sort of fucking, I don't even know why I put out a number, doesn't matter, but I was able to read a significant amount, and I had that old impulse that I knew so well, the impulse of show and tell. And even though I wasn't inclined to actually do it this time, you know, I noted it, because I'm trying to be more aware of my cycles and my habits and habitudes, attitudes towards just life in general, really. And so the best part about a tale is its shareability. And I think we're addicted to it naturally, whether or not it's gossip or we're talking about the hit TV show that everybody's interested in, or my niche books that nobody's interested in. You know, we're still compelled to push a story along. And it's almost like a story has an essence to it and a life of its own. One of my favorite books is by Neil Gaiman. It's called American Gods. And not to give away the story, the gods in the book mostly get their life force from human belief, like Santa Claus, you know, and so that means that there's different versions of gods in different parts of the world because there's different people. And when the people do migrate, they bring their gods with them, you know, but then they mutate and then there's new gods and like people end up worshiping TV and whatnot. But I do think that storytelling and the way that we push upon motifs, whereas a motif is, it's an idea and a symbol that's been used over and over and over again. And I guess that's kind of what I was alluding to earlier with the author who uses a word and knows that that word is tied to a whole bunch of other culture, ideas and baggage. So by using the linguistic flourish, or I'm still not using the right way that I want to describe this, but they're able to say without saying. And that's what good storytelling is. You know, there's magic in it. And I see it in, even in kids' TV. You know, I'm blown away by good kids' television and a good kids' movie. You know, I'm a sucker for a good kids' movie, you know, especially in a movie theater. I love taking my son to the theaters. He's young. I mean, and I've been taking him to the theater since he was very small, since he was probably like a year and a half old. He's always been very just great, with me, especially with dad. And it's another memory that I have a lot of my childhood was going to the movies with my father, and he still loves it. Like he's the kind of guy who will go to a movie by himself and completely enjoy it. Whereas I've been considering going to a comedy show by myself because I'm into it. But I don't think I could go to like a movie theater by myself yet. Maybe if I was really stoned. But I love going with my son. One of my favorite rewards and one of my favorite just weekend activities. And you know, I still get the same rush that I did when my father used to take me when I was, you know, my son's age. The way these cycles repeat, you know, the stories repeat within those cycles too. You know, a lot of the stories that children tell are told amongst children, which is kind of funny to think about. Like the Santa myth has this life that isn't often perpetuated as much by the adults and the caregivers as is thought. And you also see this in habits and just weird fad trends that children pick up where, you know, they have hazing rituals in elementary schools. In certain schools, there'll be certain rituals, you know, and it's not like the adults are coming in and teaching these things, but the kids pass along this cultural idea amongst themselves within their own age group. I don't know if that makes any sense. Stories can be told and spread in this exact same way in certain age groups, and then we might even forget about them and we age out of that specific variant. So why is storytelling important? It's magic. It's addictive. It's cultural. It spreads. It carries along with it all of the history. And often stories can help you avoid pain and struggles. Just as there might be hidden meaning, there might be hidden lessons in stories too. One of the things that I like to do is I always like to find, you know, the main idea. That was something that was taught in English class, where I took English classes. I don't know if you're in a different country. I'm incredibly ignorant as to how other cultures approach languages. I failed Spanish twice, and I failed German, and I failed French. So my brain is super bad at being bilingual, yet it seems like the entire world is multilingual or bilingual. Like, it seems like it's very normal. And I think a big part of that is just it's taught very shittily where I was attempted to be taught it. But anyways, the main idea, which was my point before I lost myself in all the sub details. Every good story has a strong theme, a strong moral. You know, Seinfeld is a great example of this. Seinfeld's one of my favorite TV shows, especially in the early seasons. The first little bit, he would tell a joke, and then after the joke, the whole episode would have to do with the joke that he told. And then at the end, he would wrap it up with something sort of abstract. Yet that's my favorite, or one of my favorite parts about the show, is your brain is almost trained to hunt for a theme, I think, before the English teachers tell you to do that. And I think it's that lesson aspect of storytelling. I think we're ingrained to look for the lesson, and with shitty television and shitty storytelling, if it can even be called storytelling in that place, I'm not sure if it can be. Like, is reality TV really storytelling? You know, is what I'm doing storytelling for that point? You know, I think there's this brand of speaking that I'm trying to do where we philosophize. You know, I hate the philosopher, you know. I don't hate the philosopher, that's not what I'm saying, but I hate that the connotation and the way that philosophy is viewed has always been viewed, really. Like, there's this term called armchair philosophy, which is this idea of the philosopher sitting in his chair, and the way that he or she does their work is by just thinking about the world from their chair. And Lao Tzu literally says that, where Lao Tzu says you don't have to leave your house and you can learn everything you ever need to know, you know? But I still think that we are meant to seek a little bit. And the storytelling is like a preemptive training that's fun. You know, there's a fun element that should never be forgotten in this. You know, and sometimes that can be lost or never learned. In Bettelheim's parenting book that I've been talking about a lot, he discussed how children, when they're learning how to read, if it's not given a fantastic magical, he literally used the magic word again, that magical element to it, if children don't have fun with it, it can become a grueling task. And I think that when I have that discussion with a lot of people in my life where I'm talking about my books, I'm like, oh, I don't like reading, I'm not a reader, never been a reader, I don't think that they ever got that spark, that magic, you know. And that spark is tied to this lesson element subliminally, because if we know that we're learning, we naturally don't want to do it, you know. The story is a spy. It's a clandestine tool that can be used or not used, but consumed in a healthy way even. Imagine if you had something that you did want to learn, or you had a goal that you wanted spiritually or materially, and you wanted to make more money, or you wanted to be able to meditate longer, or you wanted to just feel happier and have more passion in your life. Like, imagine if you could surround yourself with art and creations by minds that were geared towards the exact same goal that you had for yourself, so that without having to carve your skin or scarify or push and force your way and cajole yourself into a situation where you were better by some ulterior standard, you could just expose yourself to beautiful things. And yes, I'm calling the work and the creations of some of my favorite artists and philosophers and thinkers and scientists and empiricists and logisticians and statisticians and all of the different material that I have surrounded myself with, I think those are beautiful, beautiful creations of art to me. Some of the most beautiful gems that I've ever withheld in my life have been collections of, I think the English alphabet is, Arabic. I think it's Arabic script is where that sort of cuneiform or writing, I think it's the first bit of it, whatever. You know, it's just chicken scratch. And yet those chicken scratch somehow transferred to me this thought form from this person who might have been dead for hundreds of years. And that thought form could have made a fictional world that I was able to step inside and exist in for just a little bit and step outside of my life and maybe bring something back to my life that is still functional, you know? Or it might have been just something that changed the way that I thought for the rest of my life, that changed the way that I thought about living, changed the way that I thought about reading in general, changed the way I thought about how I wanted to think. And it was just chicken scratch on paper from somebody who could have been dead for hundreds of years. You know, that's so many reasons why the story is so important to me. And I know I hover around personal, and yours might not be literature. And that's completely fine. My point still stands tonight that behind the book, behind the movie, is this aspect of storytelling that's very human. And I'm not saying that there's not different forms of storytelling for an ant or for a raccoon or for a hummingbird. Imagine the stories of a hummingbird and how fast those go. You'd have to listen very closely or drink four cups of coffee. But I could never ever tire of being fascinated and excited for the next story. What was your favorite story when you were a kid? I want you to consider that feeling just for a second. What did it feel like when and if, I hope, your parent or caregiver read to you? Do you remember that feeling of magic that I hope was instilled? You know, I'm not saying that it was done for everybody. Not everybody has had a perfect existence. Not saying I did either. Neither did you. But can you remember that feeling if you had it? Or maybe in daycare? Or maybe when Reading Rainbow came on and that dude read it to you on TV? Because I remember that one clearly. Do you remember the first time you ever read something start to finish yourself? Do you remember a book that you really got into that you read until 3 o'clock in the morning and you didn't even realize how late it was? What was your favorite movie that you've ever seen in theaters? What was the best ghost story that you ever told? And where were you? I was in a tent with a flashlight held up underneath my chin, I believe. I was approximately 8 years old. We also crank called somebody and even called like a sex line. We were dumb kids. What will be the story you tell your children or you tell yourself next year about where you want to be? Is there a way that you could abstractify and make it a little bit less oblique? How would you teach a lesson to a child about something that you want to learn right now? That one might be a tough one. What are some ways that you can put more stories into your life? Have you ever considered audio? Audiobooks are highly available. A lot of them are free. You can listen to audio for a shit ton of different speakers. I'm obsessed with the way that speakers tell metaphors. Some of my favorite speakers, of course, being like Ram Dass. I've been listening to Jiddu Krishnamurti. He's a really great guy. I have an episode about him way back. Check that one out. That one's a good one. There's so many different, or not different, there's so many opportunities to embrace a good audio book on the way to work. You know, I like listening to audio when I'm at work, especially if I have the time. Of course, storytelling to kids. Pick out good kids' books, period. I love Neil Gaiman because he's one of my favorite adult authors, but he also writes terrific kids' books. Like Coraline, which is also a really good movie that is actually a decent movie based off of his book. Odd and the Frost Giants, The Wolves in the Walls. These are all great kids' books that I heavily enjoy reading to my son, you know, and aim for books with good morals, you know. Be very mindful that this is a great chance, you know, to pick, you know, and the way that we can pick is by reading the material and going with what vibes with what we want. And not like wanting force control, but I mean, like, if you read it, if inside you go, oh man, that was a good one. That makes me feel good inside. That feeling is also going to be felt by your child. You know, they're human. So be mindful of the chances that you can, you know, sneakily, clandestinely educate behind the guise of a beautiful story. It'd be fun for you too. Have fun with it. Make funny voices. Don't be bland. Kids know when you're bland, and kids know when you're upset too. So, anyways, I've gone on for a long time tonight, and I hope that you have some sort of inspiration to go find some form of story that you like, whether it's a video game, whether it's audio, whether it's your best friend, whether it's a book, whether it's a movie, whether it's a TV show, and go embrace and fully be present with the story. Find your theme, find something relatable, and drag something out of it to put into your life and build with it. You know, and if you have kids, be mindful of that too. I want to share with you one of my new favorites. I just started this book. It's this guy named Seneca. He was not quite a politician. He was like a consultant, but he was really high up, and he consulted this Roman king that maybe you've heard of. His name was Emperor Nero. And Nero turned out to be an awful, awful, awful tyrant. Rat bastard, to say the least. Seneca had a really good philosophy, but behind his philosophy, you know, he was very rich. And so there was a lot of tension between what he was saying and what he was doing. So a lot of people think he was full of shit. But besides fully reflecting upon the person, the words that he came out with are just absolutely amazing. And so what I have are these group of like 40 or so letters to this dude named Lucilius, who was a fellow philosopher and I think poet. And it's his side of this back and forth. And I guess there was over a couple hundred letters. I think he had the hots for the guy. You know, it was in that you know, brother loving time. But here goes. This is letter 5. This one hit me earlier, and I don't know. I'm not sure how much I'm going to read of it, but we'll see. I view with the pleasure and approval the way you keep on at your studies and sacrifice everything to your single-minded efforts to make yourself every day a better man. I do not merely urge you to persevere in this. I actually implore you to. Let me give you, though, this one piece of advice. Refrain from following the example of those whose craving is for attention, not their own improvement. By doing certain things which are calculated to give rise to comment on your appearance or way of living generally, avoid shabby attire, long hair, an unkempt beard, or outspoken dislike of silverware, sleeping on the ground, and all other misguided means to self-advertisement. The very name of philosophy, however modest the manner in which it is pursued, is unpopular enough as it is. Imagine what the reaction would be if we started disassociating ourselves from the conventions of society. Inwardly, everything should be different, but our outward face should conform with the crowd. Our clothes should not be gaudy, yet they should not be dowdy either. We should not keep silver plates with inlays of solid gold, but at the same time, we should not imagine that doing without gold and silver is proof that we are leading the simple life. Let our aim be a way of life not diametrically opposed to, but better than that of the mob. Otherwise, we shall repel and alienate the very people whose reform we desire. We shall make them, moreover, reluctant to imitate us in everything for fear they may have to imitate us in everything. The first thing philosophy promises us is the feeling of fellowship, of belonging to mankind and being members of a community. Being different will mean the abandoning of that manifesto. We must watch what means by which we hope to gain admiration do not earn ridicule and hostility. Our motto, as everyone knows, is to live in conformity with nature. It is quite contrary to nature to torture one's body, to reject simple standards of cleanliness and make a point of being dirty, to adopt a diet that is not just plain, but hideous and revolting. In the same way as craving for dainties is a token of extravagant living, avoidance of familiar and inexpensive dishes betokens insanity. Philosophy calls for simple living, not for doing penance, and the simple way of life need not be a crude one. The standard which I accept is this: one's life should be a compromise between the ideal and the popular morality. People should admire our way of life, but they should at the same time find it understandable. Does that mean we are to act just like other people? Is there to be no distinction between us and them? Most certainly there is. Any close observer should be aware that we are different from the mob. Anyone entering our homes should admire us rather than our furnishings. It is a great man who can treat his earthenware as if it was silver, and a man who treats his silver as if it was earthenware is no less great. Finding wealth is an intolerable burden is the mark of an unstable mind. But let me share with you, as usual, the day's small find, which today is something I notice in the Stoic writer Hecato. Limiting one's desire actually helps us to cure one's fear. Cease to hope, he says, and you will cease to fear. But how, you will ask, can things as diverse as these be linked? Well, the fact is, Lucilius, that these are bound up with one another, unconnected as they may seem. Widely different though they are, and two of them march in unison like a prisoner and the escort he is handcuffed to. Fear keeps pace with hope, nor does their so moving together surprise me. Both belong to a mind in suspense, to a mind in a state of anxiety, through looking into the future. Both are mainly due to projecting our thoughts far ahead of us instead of adapting ourselves to the present. Thus, it is that foresight, the great blessing humanity has been given, is transformed into a curse. Wild animals run from the dangers they actually see, and once they have escaped from them, worry no more. We, however, are tormented alike by what is past and what is to come. A number of our blessings do us harm, for memory brings back the agony of fear, while foresight brings it on prematurely. No one confines his unhappiness to the present. All right, I went on a little long there, but that was the entire letter five. So it's a great example, chunk of Seneca. I adore him rather quickly. I have found myself rather quick to like most of the Greeks, except for Aristotle. I found Aristotle very dry and meticulous, and I don't like his philosophy in general. I don't like dry logic. What I got from this, though, in Seneca is this: there is a golden mean, and I think that might be an episode coming up, is centrality. However, the golden mean for Aristotle, even though I dislike him, I'm pretty sure he coined this term, the golden mean is Goldilocks in between hot and too cold. There lies what you want, which is just right. In an action, when we approach too hot or too cold, we come in and we misfire, and we're not able to hit our mark either. So Seneca is talking a lot about when it comes to just our actions and our livelihood. And he says, if we have an earthenware spoon, we shouldn't regret not having silver. But if we have an earthenware spoon, we should also be just as wise if we can treat it like silver. I think there's a lot more subtext to that one. But we seek the in-between in everything. And that's what's difficult, is because everything is infinite. And that means there's an infinite arrangement of mediumness that I can't seem to ever find. It's so hard to live centrally. Well, anyways, I had a fantastic time speaking with you tonight. Thank you for being here. I hope to see you next week, especially if you're at the end of the show and if you listen to my dribble this long. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I hope you found some value, and I hope you're curious. If you are, please email and we can have a discussion. Remember to take care of yourself. Remember to be compassionate with yourself. This week, go find a good story, at least one good story to get excited about. And when you get excited about it, embrace that excitement and carry it. And don't binge it if it's like a TV show. You know, spread it out. Find a good story and spread it and get excited about it. And don't go just rant it off to people who don't matter, but find somebody who you think who might be interested. You subconsciously know other people's interests. You know, that's why you form friendships with people a lot of the times, you know, and then go spread the joy and go spread a story and maybe report back and tell me how you feel. Anyways, let's go see what Odin has to think about storytelling in the age of schoolagers. What? You whispered something mysterious.
Elfon, it's me here with the gingerbread man and the, what is it?
What does the gingerbread man ask? Oh.
Gingerbread man ask, go!
So, my question for you today is, what is your favorite part about stories?
My favorite part about stories, because I like listening to them over and over. And when I write the story, I'll just pick it out again.
When do we read stories?
Tonight.
When? What time do we read stories?
I don't know.
Do we read every day?
Yeah.
What is your favorite part about reading before bedtime?
My favorite part about reading for bedtime is I get a night book.
Oh, a good night book. Are you excited about learning how to read?
Yes.
Yeah? Sorry, that sound is what? You want to tell them what that sound is?
It is it. It's...
That's gross.
It's a slime bottle. It's kind of a slime bottle. And the bottle's making the slime make that noise.
Oh, all right. You want to tell me about that?
Yeah.
So what is it?
It's slime.
What is slime?
Slime's super wiggly and sticky. Okay. I splash in all you guys? Mm-hmm. Sorry. Okay. Back on seven. If you think this is good, what's your question today, Daddy?
Mm-hmm. I already asked you your question. I'm curious about your interests.
No, I thought you said we're doing your question first.
We already did. No, I'm asking you about your slime.
Wait, me. What is your question?
I asked you about stories. I asked you what you liked about stories. And when we read stories, I asked you a bunch of questions.
No, that's a little bit of story stuff.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Don't touch that to my microphone.
Okay, ready for my stuff? People, 1, 2, 3, 1. Okay.
Thank you so much for coming here.
Okay, ready, people? Do you know slime is sticky? Mm-hmm. Slime, you know slime. You can buy it everywhere. In downtown, next to King Supers, and next to my papa house, I made a little shop. A shop that can sell slime. And that will be only do free. It's free. Don't cost any bucks.
Oh, well, that's a really good business plan. I like it.
Yeah. So it's opening up and on the 6th.
Oh. Well, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Okay. My second thing about slime. Okay. I share about my school day. I had a good day today.
Cool. This is your last share, though, okay? We got to cut it. All right. I'm so proud of you for having a good day at school, though.
And this kid is staring at me.
This kid was staring at you?
Yes.
Oh, the cat or a kid?
The cat.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So, I'm back in track, people. All
right.
Do you know slime can be well for our stuff? Like, you put glitter in the slime, and slime's super lovely and stuff, and it can get on everywhere. And it can go on paper, and then it go everywhere. Go on paper.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next week.